Thank you, Violet. I have a brief announcement. If Karen Ohm Stalling is in this session, please go to the Terrace Lounge, the reimagining office, for a message. Stretch, please, stretch. Oh.
Certainly. Oh, the other is here. Sorry. No problem. Oh, c'est dommage. Excuse me? No, I don't live in Israel. I live in Washington Heights.
Oh, okay.
But I go to Our Lady Queen of the Angels on 116 and Lexington. I worship over there.
Please be seated.
Yeah, no. When I'm in New York, which is not very often on weekends, but that's where I usually worship. I know the group of women there, and that's where I go.
Please be seated. Please be seated. I think we're running out of time. Thank you. Before I give the story of Joan Martin, I'd like to report an error that is in our book. It says that Joan will be, is a doctoral candidate, and that's official now, isn't it?
ABD.
All but brain dead.
In November of 1977, Joan Martin had been recently elected as the first staff executive for Justice for Women, the National Council of Churches, Division of Church and Society. At the request of the Council General Secretary, Claire Randall, Joan led a delegation of progressive women church activists calling themselves the Feminists of Faith. Their task was to present a proactive religious presence at the National Women's Conference and provide an alternative religious force to the so-called moral majority. At the registration, Dr. Randall turned to introduce Joan to a prominent feminist activist. Like a well-groomed parish pastor, Joan extended her hand and announced, "I am Joan Martin, and who are you?" In a split second and without hesitation, the woman responded, "And I am Gloria Steinem, glad to meet you." While it was an embarrassing moment for Joan, it was more so for Claire Randall, whose face said it all. "I thought we hired a woman who knew her way around the feminist movement." To Claire's relief, in 1980, Ms. honored the Reverend Joan M. Martin as one of the 80 women to watch in the 80s, the major feminist journal of which Gloria Steinem was one of the editors. Joan?
I have never lived that story down. We are running out of time, and as one who has planned conferences, I understand that you all want to hear the kind of reflections and insights that some of us have who have been working with you, because it's important to remember that we have gathered not so that you come and hear us, but that we come from you and hopefully reflect what goes on in our ministries with you and with the communities we serve. That is to say that we thank you, as well as the organizers, for the privilege to do what we should do in our local communities of faith, and that is reflect theologically, reflect spiritually, reflect socially on what it means to be the Church of Jesus Christ. It's too bad that the Church only sees fit to provide resources for us to do these in so-called special occasions, when the issues for which we have gathered are issues which impact us every day of our lives.
Amen. Amen.
I am going to literally capsulize what I have planned to say, because that's my choice. For these few moments, I have the power, so let me exercise it. Only because it's important that we hear from you. You do have those yellow cards there to ask questions, and we want to engage you in those questions. So I will be very brief, because I think many of the things we've said really are integral to one another's words to you this afternoon and words with you. I betook myself to prayer, and in every lonely place I found an altar. Those were the words of Elizabeth, an enslaved woman and minister, born in Maryland in 1766. The true believer begins with herself. That's a Berber proverb. And then from our own beloved and contemporary Mercy Amba Odoye, there is no justification for demanding one uniform system of theology throughout the Christian community, but that theology reflects awareness of the horizon. What more is a horizon than the point where our ability to see normally ends, and where our imagination takes off? But that theology reflects awareness of the horizon toward which all believers move. Across the centuries, African women and African American women in the diaspora have lived out our lives in communities of faith that suggest that spirituality is not a phenomena which originates in any institutional structure, including the Christian church. That is to say, in a very simple way, we had spiritual lives before the Christian church came along. Further, our lives are offerings, which suggest that no institutional structure can command the parameters in which spirituality takes shape and is expressed. Stand up for a moment, everybody. When I was a camp counselor at church camp, I used to get everybody moving first thing in the morning with a little cheer. And it's called, Have You Got the Spirit? So everybody starts by clapping hands, and then following me, you do what I do, okay? And you answer me back. Have you got the Spirit?
Have you got the Spirit?
Yeah, man.
Yeah, man.
Have you got the Spirit?
Have you got the Spirit?
Yeah, gal.
Yeah.
Well, then let's see it in your hands. Let's see it in your hips. Let's see it in your feet. Sit down. Our lives are offerings which suggest that no institutional structure can command the parameters in which spirituality is shaped and expressed. Mm-hmm. Now, if you didn't get it before I said that the first time, I hope you got it after we did our little cheer. Our lives potently suggest that neither solely the self nor solely the community, and this is a point that both Violet and Ana Maria have made, that our lives suggest that neither solely the self nor solely the community is the departure point or fulfillment of spirituality. And as African American women of the African diaspora,
Our lives suggest that spirituality is related to the conditions of our concretely lived lives, and that our community in the struggle for survival, liberation, and according to Dolores Williams, productive quality of life is what spirituality is all about. The struggle for survival, liberation, and productive quality of life. I want to suggest that spirituality is foremost not related to the Christian church as an institution, but as Violet has so very powerfully shared with us, it has to do with living. Rather, I believe that first and foremost, spirituality is related to the demands of justice, and as such is part of the prophetic task of believers and our communities of faith. Why do I say that? My assumptions are three. Spirituality is not a thing in itself. It's not freestanding from all other dimensions of life. But if I come from a traditional African perspective, traditional African religious perspective on the nature of life, I know that all of life is spiritual,
yes.
From the rock to the river to the tree. I also know that spirituality is experienced. Listen to the order of these words. Experienced, understood, defined, and empowering. That is, I wrote this before I passed my exams, so that I did it before I was all brain dead. I experienced it, I understood it, then I tried to define it. And what I really came to know is that spirituality is empowering for the integration of self and community. That spirituality, thirdly, when perceived as related to all other dimensions of life for self and community, must by necessity address the concrete contexts and situations of a believing community and the conditions of the world which impact that community. Spirituality is not a thing in itself, freestanding from all other things. Spirituality is something that is experienced, understood, then defined, and as a whole process is empowering. That is related to concrete contexts in which we live our lives and the communities and the conditions upon the world which impacts our lives. Therefore, I believe that spirituality is for members of oppressed communities, and that is the context and situation out of which I speak, from the particularity of the African-American in diaspora situation, and we've heard it so eloquently addressed in the differences in the Latino women's community and the Palestinian women's community, that spirituality must be related to justice-seeking and justice-making, which entails a radical living and speaking against oppression, and therefore is the prophetic and the spiritual task of our time. Spirituality is a journey for the long haul. Spirituality is a journey for the long haul. It's important that I say a word. One of the things that has been happening at this glorious conference, and I do mean glorious, is that we, in fact, have come together and primarily talked about reimagining and reimaging from the perspective of women in patriarchy. Even though we have had women of color from a variety of situations enliven our minds and push our spirits to think about what it means to reimagine, sometimes we have not been concrete enough. We started here today trying to name the concreteness of what it means to be about spirituality. That is to say that we speak from our particularity because some generic spirituality called Christian, triune, just Holy Spirit, just Pauline doesn't cut it, friends, because the Christian experience is richer and deeper than that. And if we take anything from this conference, it's that we need to address and learn to address in specificities the reimaging of God, the reimaging of Jesus, the reimaging of the church as an institution, the reimaging of spirituality, the reimaging of work, of ethics, the practice of ministry in specifics, and that that's important. Therefore, the specific context I speak from is that of an Afro-American woman and the experience of being in the black church, even though I'm a fourth generation Presbyterian Calvinist. Maybe I really was brain dead even before I started the PhD task. In light of this, I want to share with you a quote from our good friend and womanist theologian, Dolores Williams. This grabbed me because it spoke not to my mind first, but to my heart. The black church, and this is almost heresy, friends, for me to say this, the black church does not exist as an institution. Uh-oh. Regardless of sociological, theological, historical, or pastoral attempts, the black church escapes precise definition. Some believe it to be deeply rooted in the soul of the community of black folks. Some believe it to be the core symbol of 400 years of African-American struggle against white racist supremacist oppression, with God in the struggle providing black people with spiritual and material resources for survival and freedom. Others believe it's the place where black people come to worship God without having or trying to be like they want us to be. Therefore, Dolores says, the black church is the heart of hope in the black community's experience. It is the heart and hope of the black church in the black community. Spirituality is about what kind of heart you have, friends. And it's about whether your heart makes your words and your feet walk together. Spirituality is not about right talk. It's not about right prayer. It's not about right theological doctrine. It's about right living, whether your talk meets your walk. And not just individually, but in your communities. Now, the reason that I don't think that all women's space is a safe space, Ada Maria, is because, and we differ on this one all the time, even though we really fundamentally agree, is that without talking about, specifically about things like race and class and homophobia and imperialism, our walk is valueless because it's merely talk. So if you're tired about hearing about racism, I've had fun and enjoyed you, but I'm going to keep going, and you can find something else to do. Because to come together in an ecumenical decade for the churches in support of women means that we do talk about racism. It means we do talk about classism. It means we do talk about homophobia, as well as talking about patriarchy. So what I want to do to say today is to say that spirituality must, in fact, if we understand that our walk and our talk must be the same, then we have to understand that we have to embrace a spirituality that is prophetic in our understanding of difference. Many of you know I write on this topic and speak on this topic because it is my prophetic word these days. Essayist and activist and poet, Afro-American lesbian writer Audre Lorde, who died in 1992, wrote these words which ignited my investigation into a spirituality of difference. Institutional rejection of difference is an absolute necessity in a profit economy, which needs outsiders as surplus people. As members of such an economy, we have all been programmed to respond to human differences between us with fear and loathing, and to handle that difference in one of three ways. Either we ignore it, as in whenever I go and speak to a women's organization and I talk about white racism in the United States, they say, but we're all women. Or we're all Christians. And then I have to remind people that it was good Christians that kept my folks, made it impossible, made it the law so that we could not even learn to read the Bible. Okay. You can ignore it. That's one way. If it's not possible to ignore it, then you copy it if you think it's dominant. And this is not a critique. This is to say we have to be aware how deeply structured, how well we can be co-opted even with the best of intentions. Since we came yesterday, we've been singing at intervals, I Shall Not Be Moved. Now, I grew up in the faith community where we sang, We Shall Not Be Moved. We have been called here together to learn from our differences and our similarities and to hold them both as part of what it means to be Christian spiritual people in this world, dealing in a pluralistic world. But if we let things slip by and get appropriated one more time to copy that thing and make it dominant because we all sing it, then we go home and instead of singing, we shall not be moved, we sing, I shall not be moved. We have copied one more time somebody else's stuff and we have stolen its meaning and its spiritual power. But I'm so glad that we're singing it, because I don't know a whole lot of white folks who do sing it. And thirdly, we've been taught, says Audre Lorde, to destroy differences if we think it's subordinate. To destroy differences if we think they are subordinate. So all we need to do is to look at how many of our urban churches are closing and how many of them are racial ethnic. So, I once had a member of the Board of Trustees of the presbytery to which I belong, we both sit on the mission committee as trustees, say, we shouldn't pour any more money, mission money, into those rat-infested holes. And I know that the church where I was interim pastor was busting much bleep in order to give beyond its giving to mission the year before. But we've been taught to destroy difference if we think it's subordinate. Lorde ends that quote by saying, but we have no patterns for relating across our human differences as equal. Spirituality in this time and day, and the time and day is getting late, is a spiritual prophetic task that calls us to learn to live deeply into our differences, be they the fact that I call in part upon an African traditional religious system that has held a spirituality which has enabled us to take the best of Christianity and to ignore that which tried to enslave us. I think it's a time to believe in a spirituality of difference that allows us to say, not only am I black and proud, but to also say that woman church might be a white woman's church, and that's okay, because white women have different needs from black women, as long as we understand what those needs are. Women is not the fundamental category by which we come together because of the way the world constructs our identities. And that's what Otto was talking about. To talk as a black woman in this society and in predominantly white churches means that I can talk as much as I want, but nobody listens, which is different from white women feeling that they have been kept silent and not allowed to speak. Fundamental difference. Now, how do we take those two things, put those differences together, and in Audre Lorde's words, make them a strength that stops patriarchy? I want to say two more things about difference. Difference allows a spirituality that is invisible to take concrete form. A spirituality of difference allows an invisible spirituality to take form. That is, when we see it, we know it. That means that if I ask Violet, as a Palestinian Lutheran, to put her head together with mine as an Afro-American in diaspora, Presbyterian, out of my diverse spiritual tradition. And I want to better understand human rights in Israeli-occupied Palestine, and I want her to understand the situation of black oppression in the United States. We're going to deal from those differences to deepen our understanding, not to find some surface-level commonality. But when we do, the spirituality between us will become visible and empowering. We have been taught to ignore the difference, to copy it, or to destroy it. If we do those things, then spirituality never is visible. It's never empowering. And so we think business will go on as usual, and we can't do a thing about it. We throw up our hands. That's not what spirituality is about. The second thing I want to say about it is that spirituality, even though it sometimes takes place because the church has structured itself as an institution, is not primarily an institutional or structural form. It is God presence with us. It is Emmanuel presence, in the words of Rita Nakashima Brock this morning. That is to say, we not only know it when we see it, but we know it when we feel it. Amen. And feeling it in this society means that something is wrong, and if folks don't let you feel, they're telling you that you're wrong. So get with it. When you know the Spirit is present and you can feel it, don't let anybody try to turn you around. The characteristics, therefore, I think, of a justice spirituality in concrete form, taking a spirituality of difference as our lead, by being able to no longer say that we ought to be all the same so that we can ignore, so that we can destroy, and so that we can copy, but saying that we want to make our spirituality visible, that we want to give it a form where we not only see it and feel it, but where we want it to show God present in the world, then what we need to do in order to do that is hope for the energy, act into the situation, and believe it will come, and it will. That is, God provides us so many opportunities to be spiritual beings, it almost knocks me dead. And I tell you, I must pass up about 9/10 of them looking for something that you can't see, but you only know it when you see it. Okay? There are other times. Now, that's the paradox about spirituality. Okay? That's the paradox. There's so many opportunities for us to be spiritual people, and we pass 9/10 of them by. Because we think we got to get it right in the head first and then make our feet go, when I tell you that walking and talking is one action when God is present. We also need to know that right relationship allows us to see that spirituality means that the difference between us is God created and therefore ought to be God celebrated by us. There is a reason that God made us the way we are. Made Violet Palestinian, Ana Maria Cuban American, and me Afro-American in diaspora. It's because otherwise life would be really boring if we were all the same color. I mean, I wouldn't be able to tell any of us apart. Right relationship is understanding that our differences are something that we should be grateful for. Not how we turn them into divisions. Not how we turn them into divisions. But that they're God-given, and we work from those differences to solve the structural oppression and the oppression by the church when it's a denomination or an institution. And thirdly,
why do you say diaspora?
Diaspora because that's a good question. Because I was forcefully, without will, me and my ancestors dragged from our homeland so that I was forced to leave. That means I am in diaspora. I did not choose to come here. I have made this my home, as generations of Afro-Americans have made it my home, but I am African-American. I'm not just an American, because those two related experiences means that my American experience is different from yours, and I know yours much better than you know mine. And coming to grips with our differences means that you rethink your experience of being American in light of my articulation of my experience of being American and being an African American. It's just like our rethinking and reimagining what the Christian church would be like if the mission, instead of going north and west to Europe, continued south, as Clarice Martin writes about the Ethiopian. You all would be really surprised. To do spirituality of justice, therefore, we must take every opportunity to have our walk and our talk match. We must have every opportunity to be in right relationship by giving thanks and not letting the world divide us according to the lines which God has given us in our difference. The day is different from the night, and we need both. The sea is different from the land, and we need both. Homes are different for each one of us. But a nuclear family home is no better nor no worse than a single parent family home. A lesbian and gay home is no better or worse than a heterosexual home, because it has to do with the way you walk and the way you talk. They're different. If we use them to divide ourselves, we will never know what spirituality is. And we will have to pay the price, because the price of not being spiritual people and walking and talking as part of a prophetic task is that the spirits do come back and haunt us. The ancestors do come back to tell us how they blew it and how we are about to blow it, as well as to give us strength and resources. About 4 years ago, friends of mine who live in Trumansburg, New York, went to and took me to Auburn, New York. We went to a little cemetery in which there were great monuments to those who had gone before. We walked up a hill, and there was a regular-sized headstone, and the engraving on it was beginning to fade. But there was a little American flag there, and there was a model of a plastic pistol. And this stood at the base of the hugest pine tree I have ever seen. And they said, "We wanted to show you the grave of Harriet Tubman." Now, I didn't really believe in spirits before then, or ancestors. I don't trace my lineage directly to Harriet Tubman. But what she learned, that is, "Give me freedom or I will die trying to get it," was enough for that voice to come through the ground and through the trees and through the American flag and through the pistol, saying, "You've stood here long enough. Now it's time to get back home and go to work."
Thank you, Joan. If you have a question, would you hold up your card, please?